We're almost going to complete chapter 11, but not quite. Those of you that were with us yesterday, you may remember we were reading from Gopalchampu, and it was very nice. Not yesterday, day before yesterday. And I'll read the last sentence that we read, and then we'll complete this section, move on to the next one. All the banks of the Yamuna, with their natural area surpassing fields of camphor, Govardhan, with piles of rock, suitable for sitting and lying down, and the jeweled earth of Vrindavan, with its groves of attractive trees, became causes of joy for the two boys. This is Jiva Goswami's adding to when everyone reached, when the Brijbasis reached Vrindavan, there were three things mentioned that gave special joy. Vrindavan itself, Govardhan, and the bank of the river Yamuna. So we're continuing. Very short section. Madhukanta, having finished, folded his hands and spoke to Nanda Maharaj. Oh, king of the cowherds, you have given birth to a son who, though acting as a child, maintains the universe. Now, Madhukanta understands that because Narada understands that and he learned from Narada, but that doesn't compute for Nanda. He's not the maintainer of the universe. He's my son. So, the last section. When Krishna's pastimes were thus broadcast, as on previous days, all experienced unlimited bliss and then returned to their houses. So, this is Gopalchampu. It's the two speaking, Madhukanta, Snigdhakanta, and the residents of Braja listening. And now it's Snigdhakanta's turn. As on previous days, the talks began in the early morning, Snigdhakanta spoke. After describing their pastimes while they were extremely young, we will describe their pastimes at the end of their tender Kumara age. We had this slight disagreement between the Acharyas when Kumara age ends, because for Krishna he's a little precocious, he matures more quickly than most children. But the consensus seems to be while he was still in Gokul, and then the early part of his time in Vrindavan. Snigdhakanta says, in my heart I worship Krishna's and Balaram's age of Kumara, in which they, so these are activities of Kumara age, they graduate from breastfeeding, in which they gave up drinking breast milk, in which their limbs became well-formed, in which their restlessness became prominent, and their long eyes trembled during play, during which they contentedly laughed and were absorbed in interesting pastimes, during which they became the source of pastimes for all their friends, and strongly desired to see the calves. Balaram was white with blue cloth, and Krishna was blue with yellow cloth. They became skillful at tying the milking ropes and rattling the milk pails. They were fickle in playing and imparted various emotions of love to their friends. They gradually learned to dress themselves. with an effort, he put on the cloth given by his mother and, thinking he could tie it, rejected his mother's help. He became embarrassed on only being able to half-dress himself and would put on his clothes as quickly as possible. When Nanda would go out with the cows, Krishna and Balaram would go with him, Nanda, and wander about in all directions. The boys would sit on the lap of Nanda, and all the people who came to the forest out of affection for them, and would ask about the objects in the forest, Krishna would ask, giving joy to all, saying boldly, "I will go first," though forbidden to do so. They would take 2, 4, or 6 cows and, herding them in front, go off playing. Incessantly laughing, they would run while herding cows and bulls and would stop them by grabbing their horns. They would stop 5 animals at a time. When some days had passed and mealtime had passed, Yashoda began scolding Nanda with affection. "Are you not doing something unprecedented by taking the 2 boys to the forest?" When Nanda asked permission from Yashoda and Rohini for the boys to go to the forest, the mothers refused, causing the 2 boys to feel cheated. They became shy and sorrowful. Being prevented, the 2 boys cried with anxious hearts. One time, they secretly departed in order to join their father and give joy to their companions, but not recognizing the right path, they met in a pasturing ground outside of Raja and began playing like herds of calves. Understanding the active nature of the boys, Nanda and Yashoda again considered with minds fearful in order that they could preserve happiness. Quote, "Since the 2 boys cannot remain without association of the cows, let them take care of the calves at a place close to Braja." Privately, considering the matter with his brothers who knew mantras and finding an auspicious day through priests, Nanda had the boys begin herding the calves with the chanting of auspicious mantras such as Punya Havachana. The great cowherds happily gave their young boys the duty of protecting the calves. The 2 boys appeared beautiful after being bathed, dressed, and fed by their mothers while holding sticks, milking ropes, flutes, and buffalo horns. When leather shoes were brought for him, Krishna refused, saying, "No, no." Using there would be a blow to the dharma of respecting the cows. Seeing Krishna act in this way, Balaram also rejected the leather shoes. Considering the shower of nectar from those feet, the earth removed all the thorns from that place and made the surface into dust fine like pollen by having the cow's hooves, break it into small pieces so that Krishna would wander with his feet in Vrindavan. In this way, Vrindavan, free from insect pests and thorns, is praised in Harivamsa. With the appearance of the fine footprints of Krishna's lotus petal feet everywhere, everyone became filled with bliss. I will now return to the present topic. Snigdhakanta speaking. When the boys departed for herding the calves at an auspicious moment, servants who defeated devatas and caused all auspiciousness, carrying ingredients like splendid betel nut, colorful umbrellas, chamaras, and silk cloth, followed after the boys and experienced indescribable inner happiness. Starting with their mother and father, at every door, the excellent women offered great wealth and performed arati with jewels shining like lamps. They sprinkled the boys with fragrant flowers and glorified them with auspicious songs. They satisfied the boys with a profusion of befitting sweet words. With wide eyes, they saw the boys in front of them. The two boys then departed after offering respects to the elders while experiencing the skill of faultless sounds of musical instruments. The devatas performed the same activities. Dressed in blue and yellow cloth, Krishna and Balaram, should be the other way around, Balaram and Krishna appeared glorious among the children and calves as they played using flutes, canes, leaves, horns, ropes, balls, and you won't believe it, wooden puppets. Looking at the boys in the distance with tenderness, the pious elders then returned home. So he's going to the forest. After going some distance, Krishna, Balaram, and the boys first let the calves wander freely and then put them in a group and brought them to a place filled with fresh grass. The boys played there until lunchtime. The two boys played their flutes, scattered fruits about, and went here and there making sounds with their ankle bells. Imitating bulls, they fought with each other, winning against the opponent with great affection, taking support of friends. They fought each other with great noise. Having the calves eat the grass and drink water, Krishna and Balaram then inspected all of them. Among the calves, he hugged one with his arms to relieve its itching and touched its forehead with his own. He said, "If you want to go to your mother, I will arrange that." With such useless words, he satisfies the calves. After the two splashed water on their friends, they put on special forest clothing and, wandering about, became astonished on seeing the wonderful animals and birds. When the two boys imitated the sounds of an animal, that animal would approach them. When they imitated the roaring of lions and tigers, seeing the animals become frightened, they stopped making those sounds. Happy because women sent by their mothers arrived with lunches at noon, Krishna quickly called his friends by playing his flute, whose notes sounded like human words, in order to give them bliss. When they all gathered, the women honored them, put them in lines, and had them sit down, placing Krishna and Balaram in the center. Since the boys desired to eat, the women then served them the food in the proper order. For fun, some of the boys criticized the food. They argued with the women, and some of the women answered back. After the amusement of hearing these conversations, a qualified nurse spoke to Krishna when he seemed to refuse the food in order to give pleasure to the servant boys, who could obtain the rejected food. She says, "Carefully I brought drinks and delicious food. Rohini has prepared it and sent me. Yashoda has repeatedly ordered me that you should taste the food. You should please us three by eating." After joyfully taking lunch with friends like Rama and Dama, Krishna performed Ashmana, and the nurse gave him a golden box filled with camphor-flavored betel. She said, "Oh, child, please follow your mother's orders, and, giving up your childish behavior, quickly return home." Going some distance, considering the boys engaged in playing, she turned her head and with flashing eyes said to the boys, skillful at herding the calves, "Cowherd boys, you are the life of Yashoda. Please bring Krishna back quickly." When the women had gone, the boys fed the calves the tenderest grass mixed with flowers and headed slowly towards Braja, while dancing, laughing, and playing. The sons of Brahma praised him from the sky, and devatas showered flowers. Sons of Brahma may mean the Saptarishis. That's my guess. Doesn't say. Krishna took the path leading home. Along with Balaram and his friends, Krishna began walking back in order to bring the calves to their pens. Gathering the calves in a group, he became joyful at this success and, seeing the beauty of the calves, experienced contentment. The inhabitants of Raja saw in front of them that Krishna was approaching. As in the morning, he was decorated auspiciously. He offered respects to his mother and father, and, joyful in their presence, went to his house. After bathing, he put on fresh clothing, quickly eating. He then became happy by milking the cows, calling the calves by saying their mother's name. He laughed as the calves scurried to their mothers. You can just picture all this. So nice. Servants brought the abundant milk to the house. Coming to the house, he pleased his mother and then offered her respects. Going to the rooftop to rest, he gave bliss to all. Putting their sons to sleep, the mothers, surrounded by servant boys, went to the main building to do their chores. After the boys had spent some time blissfully in Vrindavan, cruel Kamsa, hearing the news of Krishna's arrival in Vrindavan from spies, began to think, this child of Nanda seems to be the child hidden by Vasudev deceptively, according to Durga's prediction. The child has taken a new body and killed Putana, whose powers were uncontestable, by greater power. My heart fears even his name. He must be killed by some trick. He has thwarted greater and greater devices. It has become useless to attack him. Calling a servant, he said, "What does he have most attraction for?" The servant said, "He has great affection for the calves." Kamsa said, "You should go to your room." He spoke then to another person, "Bring Vatasura to me. He has caused disturbance to Indra." That person, showing courage with respect, brought Vatsasura. Vatsasura stood there in a humble state like a drop of water, and explains the metaphor. As dirt dissolves in the presence of water, comes his heart melted in the presence of Vatsasura. He whispered to Vatsasura, "My friend, Vatsasura, please go to Nanda's Vraja and then approach the boy who herds the calves and plays. Disguising yourself as a calf, attack him." Thinking, "One should follow the king's orders," he went to the place as ordered. At a clean place on the bank of the Yamuna called Vatsa Kridana. We heard about Vatsa Kridana yesterday or day before. Vatsa Kridana is when the cowherds crossed the river Jamuna. That was the place where they crossed, and then they went to another place, Chitrakar. So Vatsa Kridana. Krishna, who kills such demons while caring for the calves, saw the demon who was poisoned to the eyes. Vatsasura began proudly wandering about with his false motivations. The calves sensed his presence by his smell at a place with abundant grass and became agitated at his sight. Seeing their condition, Krishna said to Balaram, "In a solitary place, elder brother, have you seen a calf near the water which did not come with the others in the morning?" Balaram said, "No, brother." Krishna said, "Please examine things carefully." Balaram said, "It seems to have a ferocious nature." Krishna said, "O elder brother, it is a demon." Balaram said, "That is true, since he is subtly looking at the other calves and us with a cruel glance." Krishna said, "If you give permission, I will kill him." Balaram said, "I fear gossip from the people." Now, we read this at Jumana Jivanas and Sri Radhika Swami. I remember the exchange. This is just a repeat because that was in a little segment. This is now basically the whole chapter. Balaram said, "I fear gossip from the people." Krishna said, "On killing him, it will be clear that he is a demon. No one will criticize us." Balaram said with a smile, "Oh, killer of the enemy, the demon is very devious. Slowly approach him by some trick." Krishna, marked with the Sri Vatsa, caught the calves close with a stuttering sound and relieved the itching on their throats and bellies. Playing and singing everywhere, he spread joy. Thinking that he had obtained his opportunity, the demon, disguised as a calf, approached Krishna to be scratched. Showing an affectionate nature, Krishna took the calf by its feet and tail and began twirling it about. By twirling the demon around many times, the demon lost its powers and reverted to its original form. In order to make fruits fall from a tree, he hurled the demon into a bale tree, or usually it says kapas tree. The cowherd boys praised his grace, which was like that of a dancer, and his power of knowledge. The devatas showered laughter and smiles. One could not distinguish the shower of flowers from the shower of smiles. The devatas, raising a wave of laughter with smiles, said, "Certainly the conclusions concerning Krishna, the killer of demons, has been fulfilled." They expressed Krishna's thoughts as follows. "I'm a cowherd boy, and I know about cows. If anyone hides himself, I can understand the enemy of the cow by inference. Oh, enemy of the devatas, disguised as a calf, how can you escape my hand? If you desire to be free when dead, you can have liberation." In protecting the calves, Krishna and Balaram protected all people. To do this, they took their breakfast and then killed demons. Krishna and Balaram returned to their houses as on the previous days. They told their friends to keep the killing of the demons secret, since it would disturb the elders. Killing of a calf. But obviously they found out about it. It comes out later. So we have just short number of pages for tomorrow, and then we're going to go on to chapter 12. The section that we're not reading is Bakasura, and then Krishna's return after the killing of Bakasura. So because we've been having a lot of questions, and sometimes even questions that don't get answered, I thought of cutting it. I could go on if there's no questions, but cutting it at this point, it's 7 o'clock. That this is just this section we just read. It's a summary in a particular style of literature by Jiva Goswami, to summarize the same chapter, Krishna's childhood pastimes. And it leads into the next childhood pastime, still with the herding of calves. Chapter 12 is the boys going out and doing what boys do when they were taking care of the calves. And then a long section, lots of details of what they did together. And Agasura and the killing of Agasura and Brahma seeing and what happened. And then comes the next chapter. Brahma's stealing the calves. And then the next chapter is his prayers. Celebrated pastimes with lots and lots of detail. Just a few points. It was not only said during our yatra, but it's something our acharya is speaking about when we were in Ayodhya. Although the chapter is Balakanda, there's not a whole lot of description about Krishna's, Ramchandra's childhood pastimes. And it's said by acharya, if you're interested in his pastimes, go listen to Krishna's pastimes. Because Ram and Lakshman are Krishna and Balaram. And it is said that Lakshman was the younger brother because there was so much tribulation by the choices of his elder brother, and the next time around he became the elder brother and Krishna was the younger brother. But it's also said that during their childhood pastimes, although here he's specifically referring to him as elder brother, the relationship was just playful friends, little boys. And the nature of the relationship shifted as they moved to Mathura and then even more so in Dwarka. Like, you know, the marriage of Subhadra that was in the hands of Balaram. Of course, Krishna did what Krishna did with Subhadra's marriage. But so it's just, there's all these different relationships and dynamics of exchanges that are delightful to the hearts of the residents of Vrindavan. And sometimes just these little one little statement is made that indicates a whole bunch of other things, like we'll be reading tomorrow. When Krishna simply touched a creeper, or Krishna dangled his foot in the river Jamuna, or Krishna glanced at the birds, since the gopis knew what was happening to the creeper, to the river, and to the birds, they became stunned with ecstasy. So his presence in Vrindavan was a festival for all the living entities within Vrindavan. And even the inanimate objects within Vrindavan, it was a festival. So what to speak of when they have a festival? Like this statement in Vrindavan. Oh yeah. There was this question of time. And we were discussing yesterday, midday, and this morning. So in that verse 56, someone asked me afterwards, one of the questions from China that didn't get answered because of technology, how does time work in the spiritual world? How does time work in the spiritual world? I'll read to you what there's specific reference to that text 56. I think that one of the main things about time is, besides it doesn't pass, everything is eternally present, that's eternal time. The main thing about time is it destroys things, so there's nothing in the spiritual world that's destroyed. And for that matter, there's nothing in the spiritual world that's created. So the effect of time in this world is bring things into being and then destroy things. It moves matter, like that example we heard of the wind moving clouds. So time moves matter. Here's some references. In Goloka, this is Brahma Samhita, translation. In Goloka, there is eternal existence of transcendental time, who is ever-present and without past or future, and hence is not subject to the quality of passing away even for the space of half a moment. There's no passage of time. And from the Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, this is Kapila's teachings. The devotees in the spiritual world are never deprived of any enjoyment. My wheel of time does not afflict those devotees for whom I am a lover, the Atma, son, friend, elder companion, or worshipable deity. So just as time in the material world destroys things and it creates delusions, and the time is eternal, but yoga in the spiritual world, yogamaya allows for there to be a sense of passage of time. Because there's different pastimes at different times of the day, so although they're eternal activities, Krishna's lila is eternal, there's the sense of passage of time. Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses this, the whole idea of eternal time. How can you explain it? Because we can only think of time as past, present, future. And even the present is not the same as the present that we think of. The present is like in between past and future. But you know, the present of illusion is not the eternal presence of reality. Is that clear? That like, you know, if you become a Buddhist, you try to be in the moment. be present. But, you know, there's get on the other side of the moment. Because time is but a series of moments. So there's the present moment. And then the other side of the present moment is eternal time. The eternal present. That's far out. And how do we access that? I mean, it's like it defies the mind to even properly understand, but we can enter through the medium of devotional service because that connects with Krishna, and Krishna is in that realm of eternal time. It's quite a mystery, and it's profound. But it requires seeing things in a different way. And that's not easy to do because we're accustomed to seeing things according to three-dimensional space and past, present, and future time. Time and space. As we know it, as illusion impresses that upon us. So just hearing, and again hearing, that's why I decided to read this again, although we read it 2 weeks ago or so, 3 weeks ago, whenever it was. Very sweet pastimes. Sounds like a lot of fun. If you ever wanted to have a lot of fun, don't like, you know, stuff that you have to do today, these days, become a cowherd boy. Jump in the pool and have fun. And then starting tomorrow, we'll hear much more about that. Somebody put together a series of Prabhupada's little informal statements. Maybe I'll try to find that. Where he really appreciates the cowherd boys. As you know, his often Krita Punya Punja phrase, that Shukadeva Goswami's just ecstatic expression that how many pious activities these boys have performed to have the opportunity to play with the personality of Godhead. But not just that a little expression, I'll come up with it. I just have to remember to come up with it. It'll just include that in the beginning of tomorrow's class. Prabhupada's appreciation of the cowherd boys. So let's see if there's some comments or discussion or anything. Somebody in Baltimore?
Yes, her sister.
Her sister.
She heard another big class and she wanted to.
Okay.
So her question was, if Krishna and Balaram are not invited by Kamsa to Mathura, they would have stayed in Vrindavan for some years, or how that sequence would make the changes?
How does?
That sequence would make the changes. Means like, I think what she meant is like if they would have not gone to Vrindavan, stayed back in Vrindavan, how would the things would be?
How would have things been if they didn't go to Mathura? Different. But thanks to Narada Muni, he went. You know the story, right? Does your sister know the story?
I think so, but I can tell her.
Okay, you tell her. Nice question. Anyone else? There's a fly that wants something here.
Guru Maharaj, I'm not so clear on the question myself, but I'll just put the thoughts. Like when I do a service or an activity, I tend to, like, after it is done, even I do it as much as possible in the mode of service and be conscious of it.
Good.
Still, the mind, you know, after finishing the activity.
Want to, like, take credit.
That is one thing. But dwell on, oh, I should have done like that, or I should have done like this, and keeps going in that circle. I know we hear from Bhagavad Gita, don't be the doer, and you know, the results are up to Krishna.
Okay.
But still, you know, that.
Well, that, you can spiritualize that. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a fault. It can be a fault, or it can be an asset. That is to say, you know, it's human nature, and even you can adjust the volume. It's human. Vyasadeva, after completely compiling the Vedas, he stepped back, and so it's natural. When we do something, how did it come out? You know, when you were leading kirtan, you might have been thinking, I hope the devotees liked it. Or when you cook a meal, I hope the devotees liked it. Maybe I put too much salt, or maybe I hit a wrong key on the keyboard, or you know, I can do it better. So it's not necessarily a fault. It can be. It can be the doership fault. But it can also be, you know, I want to make it very nice. And if it's, including if it's pleasing to the devotees, then I know it's been pleasing to Krishna. That's one of the ways that I can tell. So, it's not necessarily a fault. It depends on the consciousness of that review process.
If it is a little bit more than that, like kind of beating myself, you should have done like that. Does that mean, is that a negative emotion?
Is that what?
Is that a negative emotion?
Not necessarily. It depends on, you know, the way that you're viewing. I could have done something better. Mm-hmm. It depends on the consciousness of doership or not. It's not right or wrong. Okay. It's the consciousness behind it.
Maharaj,
yeah.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
There was a mention of.
You're going to ask a question tonight. Later. But I'm calling on you ahead of time, so get ready. Because we don't get to see you. You've got to ask a question. Okay, go ahead.
It said Krishna and Balaram, and you corrected saying Balaram and Krishna.
But he has the color of cloth. That's all.
Okay. I got a little confused. Because
that's why I did it.
Okay.
That's why. It was blue and yellow, and it had just, I was just correcting the order to match the color of the cloth. That's all.
Got it. In the temple, the deities are placed Balaram first, Subhadra next, and Krishna third, Jagannath. Is there a reasoning behind that, Maharaj?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You want to know what the reasoning is. Okay. Just like Lakshman is always to the right, Balaram is always to the right. So that's like Lord Nityananda is to the right. That's where the expansion of the Lord goes. And Subhadra is in the middle. She's being protected by them. Is that all right?
Yes, Maharaj.
But what?
Radharani is also an expansion. But
what that?
Radharani is also an expansion.
But that's Shakti. She's on the other side.
Oh. Okay.
But Balaram doesn't go on the same altar with Radha Krishna.
Thank you,
Maharaj. You mentioned that the Gopa boys praise Krishna for his knowledge. So,
where did he get his knowledge?
Was it the knowledge of just killing the demons, or did Krishna express anything?
Oh, everything. He was so clever, and he find interesting ways to do everything.
Okay. So that sphere of the knowledge, not like...
No, just he's cool. Hey man, you're cool. Clever. And you know, the elder gopis, they praised Krishna like that too. He finds, you know, very, very interesting ways when we try to stop him from stealing and this and that. He finds some way. And if that gets checked, then he does some other way. And he's a very intelligent boy. Prabhupada has said many times, for a little boy or a child to be mischievous, with some limit of age, that's a sign of intelligence because they're finding different ways to do things.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
So can I ask you a general question, Maharaj?
And many things you like, five of them.
So Maharaj, with so many things going on, how do we really balance, you know?
How do you do what?
How do we balance?
How do you balance all the things that are going on?
Yeah.
You have many hands. Time management is how you balance. It's actually not exactly balance, it's time management. And you may not, because there's so many things to do, you may not get all the things done because there's so many things to do. And I'm not so good at time management. But as you become more in the mode of goodness, not you, all of us, as we become more in the mode of goodness, regulation is a factor, or is a symptom, or it's conducive for mode of goodness. And so when there's regulation, there's a time for this, and there's a time for that, and there's a time for each things. And then circumstances change because of whatever. The weather changes, or the kids have to go back to school, or whatever's going on. Something changes. So we have to recalibrate because we want to maintain core regulation with some, you know, flexibility. So it to get things done requires good time management. And there's always more to do than we seem to have time to do, because there's always more. And that's okay. You can't beat yourself up because you can't do more than what you can do. You do what you can do and manage your time well. It's one of the statements that Jiva Goswami makes in his commentary on that Brahma Samhita verse 5:56. Not a single moment is wasted there. Not a single particle of time is wasted. So, you know, what's wasting time? And then, so you use time. That's the requirement for good time management. The highest level of time management is bhava. That's one of the, there's a list of symptoms of bhava. No waste of time. Every time is very valuable because it's for Krishna's service. So that's the spirit that gets one beyond even the mode of goodness, is transcendence. And then things become very powerfully done, concisely, and focused, because your attention is focused. The best way to achieve that, you already know what that one is, right? Attentive japa. That's the best. Focus the mind and then it carries over to all your other activities. Say it the other way. If your chanting is distracted, thinking, oh, I've got so many things to do, and you're not going to be focused even when you're doing those things. And the other way, if you're focused when you're chanting, you'll be very focused and it'll take less time. You'll be better at time management. So one thing takes care of all the other things. I don't think the problem is that you're lazy or you're perceived as being lazy or something like that. It's just, it's the more your Krishna consciousness is there, then you have transcendental time management, not just mode of goodness regulation. And so work your way. And Krishna will help you. Because he sees you want to do lots of service. So it'll help you get your time management act together. Okay. Anything online? We'll go to online before more room stuff.
There's quite a few questions online. The first one is from Pooja Singh Mataji. And I think this is like a multi-part question. You were told me to read like one part at a time.
One part at a time.
What does the demon Vatsasura signify in our hearts?
I don't recall. I can look it up. Or ask Prema Trangani. Maybe one of the persons here can find this in their digital device. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's teaching. Next. If Prema Trangani is listening, she only listens to the morning class. She'll know. Shatrupa, if you're listening, you can send in the text. Go ahead.
So seeing demons as anartha in our hearts makes it very inspiring to pray to Krishna to vanquish our anarthas.
Yeah.
But one difference that I am trying to understand is that devotees willingly ask the anartha to be eradicated, but the demons are still very inimical. How can we understand this for ourselves?
How can we understand it? Well, you can understand things when Krishna gives you intelligence. I'm not sure what the question is. How do you understand why demons are tenacious? Because they're demons. And we're being attacked by, those influences. Now, what if one's transcendental, one isn't attacked by those influences? You're protected by Krishna. But if you're not protected by, if you're not attending to be attentive to Krishna, then you're going to fend for yourself. But Krishna consciousness, we are depending upon Krishna to protect you. He'll protect you. And then their tenaciousness or fierceness subsides because of Krishna's help. That's it?
The next question is by Sanchari Dasi Mataji.
Mm-hmm.
And she asks, as Balaram was the son of Mother Rohini, was he always aware that he was the son of Vasudev? Also, it's amazing to me that Kamsa had close friendships, enough to melt his heart like that with Vatsasura.
And that's Jiva Goswami's way of saying. It's just indicating something about his nature, his personality, very submissive, and Kamsa like that. Water dissolves dirt. what Balaram was aware of was, previously I was in Devaki's womb and then I got transferred by Yogamaya into Rohini's womb. He's omniscient. So in that sense, because he's omniscient, he knows everything, including that. And in other cases, By influence of Yoga Maya, he may be forgetful of that. But he's, you know, the bottom line is he's omniscient, like Krishna.
The next question is by Tirumaleshwara Naik Rama Batula. Guru Maharaj, Hare Krishna, please do it again.
Yeah, skip it.
How to learn to see things as it is in relation to Lord Sri Krishna in a consistent manner without in illusion ways. Oh, it's from Vishalaksha.
I know, but so when you see that name in the future, that's Vishalaksha. He wants to know, how do we do what? Consistently
see things in relation to Krishna.
See things in relation to Krishna. How do we consistently see things in relation to Krishna?
Without in an illusion.
Without being an illusion. Well, if you're an illusion, you're not going to see things in relation to Krishna. So, but you know, the answer, these kinds of questions has a very simple answer. By the process of Krishna consciousness. Well, how do we apply the process of Krishna consciousness? The scriptures are replete with instructions of how you apply the process of Krishna consciousness. You know, in Nectar Devotion, it describes the bhakti principle and how to nourish it. As we awaken, it's two things, cleansing and awakening. And as the process of bhakti is the cleansing process and it's the awakening process. And as we become attached, mama nusmara yujicha, as we become attached to remembering Krishna, what's the Sanskrit for text 1 of Bhagavad Gita chapter 7? Without looking. Who knows the verse? Maya sakta manak partha yogam yunjan madashraya asam shayam samagram yam mam yatagya sashi tachtrinu. Can anyone else say it? Maya sakta, asakti means attached, right? So Krishna says, I'm going to explain to you how you can become attached to Krishna. And when you become attached to someone, you always think of that someone. So, read chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita. And read the middle 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. And that gives you the how-to. Next question.
This question is from Amit Verma Prabhu. And he asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he says in parentheses, I think, has a parallel between demons and anartha. Oh, this is the same question.
Same question. Okay, go ahead. Next.
This question is from Shalish Parmar.
Okay.
And they ask, time is eternal in the spiritual world.
Yes.
But is there day and night?
Yes. It's day and night is for Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, there's no day and night because there's no passage of time as we know it. But there is day and night. That's Yogamaya for the purpose of pastimes. Time is, in the words of Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj, time is very flexible. Like Narada going to Dwarka and seeing different things at different times of the day at the same time of the day. one place it's nighttime, another time it's noon, another time it's evening, another time it's morning, another time, all at the same time. And Krishna's doing, so it's very flexible in the spiritual world. It's all for the purpose of serving Krishna. Time moves according to Krishna's will for enjoyment. And that's kind of very unlimited. Krishna's propensities for enjoyment. So very flexible, but eternal. Day and night, yes.
The part two to the question, I think you kind of already answered this.
Okay.
But the spiritual world is self-illuminated. But what happens when it is night?
Yeah, it appears to be night. The sun sets. But, you know, as we know from Bhagavad Gita, there's no need. Although there's no need, everything is self-luminous. There's still day and night for pastime purposes. Go ahead.
This question is from Amara Mataji, and she asks, Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, trying to counteract something sanctioned by Krishna, for example, treating a disease, how to see that in the light of faith in Krishna's arrangements?
Well, Krishna's arranging for you to take care of a disease. And understand the world is not a pleasant place. Jamaruchu Jaravyadi. It's one of the four miseries of material existence. And while you're here, you deal with it, but you don't just look the other way. You deal with it responsibly. We deal with duality responsibly without identifying with it. More online, or we have more in the room? Would you like to ask something? Oh, quiet one over there. Okay, can I? Huh?
Maybe like give me some
time. Okay, I'll give you some time. Put you in the spotlight. Okay, let's go online.
This one is from Smita Kut. This one is from. Oh, yeah, okay. This one is from Rasa Krida Das Prabhuji. And he asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, Hare Krishna Maharaj, where does a soul go when he merges with the Brahma Jyoti? Is that a place?
Yep. Prabhupada speaks it like this. The Brahma Jyoti is particles of light. I mean, this is his explanation. Just like sunlight is particles of, just as the sun is fire, there's particles of fiery light. That's what sunlight is. So, the Brahma Jyoti similarly is particles of living entities that are effulgent. And so you just merge into the Brahma Jyoti. You enter into that effulgence of the Supreme Lord. That's unlimited numbers of effulgences or particles of effulgence. He doesn't go into this, is it a particle or a ray? That's quantum mechanics, but he speaks of it like that.
The next question is from Yamuna Jivana Das Prabhuji, and he asks, being controlled.
Read a comment. Comments are nice.
Being controlled by greed and the sinful activities caused by it are represented by Vatsasura.
Okay, say it again slower.
Being controlled by greed and the sinful activities caused by greed are represented by Vatsasura.
So say it the other way around, the third time. Vatsasura represents greed and the sinful activities that are generated from greed. Okay. So Pooja, you have the answer now.
I think that is it for online questions.
She's ready.
So I was wondering, in like previous lectures, you were saying that Radharani, she becomes Satyabhama. So I was wondering, like, if you could explain more of that, or is that going to come in the future?
That's Krishna Consciousness 401. And if you want to find out more about it, you can read either... Shivaram Maharshi has summarized it, but it comes from Rupa Goswami's Vidanta Madhava. And, as you know, the first wife that Krishna marries is Rukmini. And Rukmini is in the right wing gopis. Right? You know the right wing, left wing? They're very obedient. And then the left wing, they always talk back to Krishna. You know, Radha and her group, Lalita especially. So that's the left wing gopis. So Chandravali is the leader. She has her gopi assistants, but she's the leader. She's directly Radharani's expansion. We read this the other day. She's not the full amount of Radha's Ladini Shakti, but she does what she does to enhance the pastimes of Radha and Krishna for the pleasure of Krishna. His Ladini Shakti, her expansion. And when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, it's a long story. Very involved, very, very complex. But Radha, feeling separation from Krishna, something like this, she enters the river Jamuna and disappears. And the sun god comes, because she's a worshiper of the sun god, right? Sun god comes and takes her to his abode. When the right time comes, she descends, or her expansion descends, in Dwarka. And there's a long thing of how they come to understand who they are. So it's very interesting. It's very, 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 very interesting. But Satyabhama is the left wing. She's the one that talks back to Krishna. Doesn't exactly talk back to Krishna, but she plays hard to get, and she does things like that. And Rukmini is just the opposite. You know, Krishna's teasing her, saying, "You really shouldn't have married me. I'm not suited for you." And he talks like, "I'm out of here." Or, "You should really have nothing to do with me. I'm a bad person." And she faints. You know that from Krishna book, right? Like a cut banana tree. And Krishna's amazed at how much affection she has for him. Her love is completely pure. And Chandravali's love is completely pure. And Satyabhama's love is completely pure, but she does these sassy things sometimes. And then Krishna speaks about it, you know, and she smiles. So, it's a very, very, very complicated narration, but the principle, it's not a front and center Srimad Bhagavatam topic. It's a topic that our acharyas explain because of their deeper insight in the nature of Krishna's pastimes. He promised he would marry them, and he marries them. You know, the Vastrahara, Krishna steals the garments of the gopis, and he promises he'll marry them, and he keeps his promise. But he does it in a very intriguing way. because there's different leelas. There's the Braja Leela, there's Mathura Leela, there's Dwarka Leela. They marry him in Dwarka, not in Braja. It's a different leela, different mood of love. Okay?
Two more questions have come up in that time.
Okay.
This one is by Claire Reed Mataji, and she asks, is the depression nowadays merely a result of one's sinful activities? The sinful activities mentioned in NOD, Nectar of Devotion, are vikarma or any mundane activities without Krishna consciousness?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is just in terms of the modes of nature. It's association with the mode of ignorance. And, you know, as one's identification with the body gets stronger and stronger and stronger, ignorance gets stronger and stronger, and emotions also become darker and darker. It can be looked at that way. So what do you do when that mode is happening big time? What do you do when the passion mode is happening big time? You know, you take shelter of the mode of goodness. You cultivate the mode of goodness. You make mode of goodness choices and so forth. But anyway, her question is karma? Yeah, it's one way of looking at it, but karma is not the same as guna, and guna is not the same as karma. That's a combination of the two, guna karma.
The next question is by Shalish Parmar Prabhu, and he asks, Maharaj, what happens to our ancestors in Pitraloka? As long as we do Pindadana, do they stay there only, or do they have to take birth again? Is Pitraloka a permanent place for them?
No, it's not a permanent place for them. And it's a bit of a mystery. I had to do a ton of research to get to the bottom of it. And it goes like this. It's on the one hand, it's a place where pious people go, and they go there because, they're not just like anybody that your ancestor goes there. That's not what happens. It's because the deceased persons go to all kinds of different places. It's a very specific place where the mood is connected to family. So I'll just say this again. It's not that anyone that's your ancestor, they've gone there. So you do, you know, this Shraddha, and therefore it's taking care of your ancestors that are in Pitraloka. Because your ancestors can be any place in the universe. But some may have gone to Pitraloka. So in those that go to Pitraloka, they're pious, and their well-being is dependent upon the eldest son of the descendants of you, or the next generations, plural, several generations, offering pinda. And if that does happen, then they prosper in Pitraloka. And if that doesn't happen, then they suffer terribly in Pitraloka. And if they continue to prosper, they may take birth again in that same family that's been offering pinda. They just do a switcheroo. You know, the descendants go to Pitraloka and you go back to the place where the descendants were offering pinda. You stay connected because of attachment to the body and bodily conception. And it's said that if that pinda is in this age, it stops. So if that sacrifice doesn't take place, then those pious souls in Pitraloka suffer terribly. And that's a good recruiting ground for Yamaraj to get people to help him with, you know, because the people are people are sinful. They're ready to be Yamadutas because they've been suffering so much because people aren't following Dharma of offering Pinda. They had to suffer too much. And its location is another thing. Where is Pitchaloka? I did some research with the help of some very scholarly devotees. In fact, one of the main ones that helped me with this was the devotee that's in charge of the TOVP, the planetarium. And maybe it's best, rather than say all this, I can just share that document. How's that? I'll share the document and you send it out to people that are, and make sure you, the person asking this question. Silesh is the one asking? Okay. He's in California. I don't know how he found out about this. But you'll remind me, right?
A couple more questions have
okay.
come through.
They keep coming, yeah.
This one is from Akila Dara Das Prabhu, and he says, or he asks, Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, I've been inquisitive for a long time that in the spiritual world, Vaidya is not there. So there will be no hospitals in the spiritual world.
Right.
Please guide.
He wants to know, are there hospitals in the spiritual world? I've never read anything about a hospital in the spiritual world. As far as I know, there's no such thing. But thanks for asking. Very creative question. You want to be a doctor in the spiritual world. And you won't have a job. Is there unemployment in the spiritual world? Go ahead.
Maharaj, what should one introspect on if one is finding that not making any progress in devotional life, including chanting? Not whatever energy you put in, it's not really getting a grip on it or moving forward or...
Well, as simple is, hey Krishna, hey Govinda. And not just one time. Like a child, dependent, calling for mother or father. Continue to make sincere effort, counting on the mercy of Krishna, and call for the mercy of Krishna. And if it's still not happening, call louder. Call, a blood-curdling call. You know what I mean? Just like with lots of sincerity. Because it's not a defect. A mistake would be to think, and I don't think you think this way, but somebody may think this way. I guess I'm just a loser and all that, the negative thinking process. I'm no good. I'm broken. You remember that slide from the last, but Krishna says that's okay, accept you who you are. And that's from Krishna's side. But so you just keep effort and mercy, and Krishna's merciful. And he doesn't have to like jump when you say jump. I mean, not that you're thinking that, but he'll move as he moves. And we just keep with faith in the faith in the process of bhakti, not faith in ourselves, but faith in the process of bhakti and faith that Krishna is merciful. So I may be, you know, insignificant crumb, but Krishna is very merciful and the bhakti process is very effective. And I'm making my sincere effort and I'm calling for Krishna's help. That's what you do. I had this communication with someone today. They've been practicing bhakti for 27 years and they feel that they're, you know, they don't feel like I haven't gone anywhere. They feel like I'm just a very small, insignificant beginner. And it's not like self-flagellation. That's just how they feel. And they're not discouraged. Bhakti is very simple, just pleasing Krishna. It's not that just go to the simple rather than, you know, the things that you may feel, those are the measuring sticks.
Maharaj, this is, again, with the over-enduring question, which we had talked about earlier. Is it wrong to aspire and desire to have a strong sadhana routine, wanting to read, wanting to teach, and all those kind of desires.
Yeah.
And
it's not happening.
Again, seems like nothing is really headed towards that.
We keep trying. You help your wife. She wants it too. Don't get stuck. Don't get emotionally stuck. That's my advice. Because this question, the flavor of this question is a question that you ask in different ways at different times, but it has the same flavor. I'm very familiar with the flavor. So don't get stuck. The process is fresh. And Krishna is ever fresh. So the faith goes to the process and to Krishna. And you make your best effort, you know, whatever that is. And sometimes it seems to be going a little better. We hope the rest of the time it's not going much better. That's okay. What are you going to do anyway? Toss in the towel and say, you know, I'm jumping off a bridge or something. You can't do that.
I mean, sometimes I feel frustrated. I feel like at least I should have some small victories kind of thing, but small gains kind of thing.
We're all individual, and, you know, our journey is an individual journey, and yours is yours, and mine is mine, and each of us, it's our journey. So, enjoy it. Krishna wants your heart. So, that's our journey. And maybe our heart is hard, or maybe something, so many somethings. But that's what Krishna wants. You find a way to make that connection. Again, emphasis on the object of the bhakti process is very, very kind. And the process is very effective. And we're hard-hearted. It's not going in like we feel it should or we could, or we are where we are. We are, you know, our situation is what it is. Our journey is what it is. And so accept it. And you stay with it. With faith. I don't doubt, I don't think you doubt your faith. It's just you don't seem to be making the kind of progress, or at least some kind of signs of progress you'd like to feel. So you just, that's your journey. That's where you are. And Krishna is kind and he'll help you. That's where we take shelter. And in association of devotees, you're keeping the association of devotees. You have some you know, skill with technology that doesn't always cooperate, and Krishna's giving you that opportunity for service too, using a propensity to serve the Vaishnavas all over. I mean, what Surabhi said this morning, there were over 100 devotees online from China. And technology was like not cooperating. But, so it doesn't mean you're a failure, it just means, you know, something. We have to figure out a way. We just keep, so. We give ourselves to Krishna's service. In God we trust. Yeah. Okay. Anything further?
Yeah, there's a few online. I think there's like one. Yeah, there's only one or two more. So this one is from Srinidhi, and she asks, as Balaram is the older brother, how was it that Krishna became the king of Dwaraka?
He didn't. Ugrasena was king. Next.
So I'm not really sure if this is, I don't know if it's a question per se, but
it's an explanation.
Yeah, I think it's an explanation about Pitraloka.
He can send it to me and I'll add it to my document. Okay. Are we done? He's got something over here. I think we're going to wrap up.
Good morning. This is from yesterday's Hampi lecture. Comment and one question. When you were saying like the devotees expressed when they were at Kodandarama temple, the deities.
Yes, that, yes.
Actually, just looking at those deities, it was mesmerizing.
You had the same experience?
I had the same experience, and I can only just imagine how it must have felt, you know, just being there. So I was just relating to that. Very.
Did you go there when we went to Hampi? Just seeing
him? I couldn't go, Maharaj. Just seeing in the photos that you shared yesterday, I really had that.
There's three devotees that said the same thing. Uh-huh. Separately, they didn't go at the same time, but they had the same experience.
It was just amazing to just look at them. It's mesmerizing, the deities.
Well, I'll take it one step further. I won't say which one of them said it. They said, I felt I was in the presence of Radha and Krishna in the form of Sita and Ram being married. Wow. And there was that feeling. Then I shared it with Nityananda Pran, who's like, you know, really, really into Ram's Leela. Yeah. And he made some comment like, yeah, I mean, I don't remember exactly how he replied. But, you know, a similar transcendental feeling. You know, so it's as quiet and as uncommercialized as Hampi is, it's a very powerful place. I'm surprised it's not become a commercial place because it's so spiritually powerful.
The question I had was yesterday when you were reading the in relation to all the vanaras taking birth.
Yeah.
And how the demigods begot all these vanaras.
Yeah.
I heard you read that Brihaspati begot Tara. Is this Tara same as Vali's wife?
No. It's a different one. There's Tara and there's Tara. Ah, okay. But I don't ask me too many details. If you want details, ask Nityananda Pran or Lal Gopal. Because that's their, you know, their territory.
Yes, and also, I mean, I was going to make a request.
Yeah.
Do you have something similar to present on Pandharipur pastimes? was going to request about Vittal mainly. If you could speak some other time on Vittal.
Someday. I've got a lot of projects in front of me that I haven't even touched yet.
Yes, Maharaj. And also just...
If you want the text, do you want to receive the text?
Yes, Maharaj.
From the Yatra?
Yes, Maharaj.
Ask Vamsi Dari and he can make that arrangement for you.
Yes,
and if he can't, then Shyam Kund, okay. He created the text, but I believe Vamsi Dari can.
Yes, and also, while in the Yatra...
Or Jamuna Jivana, because they were on the bus and their bus leaders had to speak about it because we had that long bus ride.
Yes.
So they were speaking about it on the bus ride. They have the text. I don't think I do.
Was there recorded lectures on the local pastimes of Pandharipur? Because I heard the...
It was in the bus. So I don't think they recorded the bus ride.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't hear you speak.
I didn't. That's okay. Why you didn't hear, because I didn't.
Okay.
It was on the bus for the fifth time. There's a book about the glories of Pandharpur that Lokanath Maharaj created. It's published. It's available. But what was spoken about was highlights, specific about, there was highlights, Tukaram and Vittal and things. But there's other, so many other things in Pandharpur. It's a special place. Okay, I think we're going to end, even if there's more online. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.